You are Locked On Seahawks, your daily Seattle Seahawks podcast. Part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Greetings 12, this is Corbin Smith, your host for Locked On Seahawks. It's Crossover Thursday. I'll be teaming up with Joe Marino of Locked On Bills, getting ready to break down this upcoming Week 9 matchup between the Seahawks and Bills. Two teams with 6 wins apiece, 2 of the best teams in the NFL. Looking forward to it. This football season will be different, and Pepsi is here to get you ready for game day, no matter how you watch this season. If you're like me and can't wait to watch Russ cook throughout the season, Pepsi is the refreshment you need to power through game day and become a member of the League of Football Watchers. Because Pepsi isn't made for those who play the game, it's made for those who watch it. Pepsi, made for football watching. Now for your lead story here on Locked On Seahawks. After missing 4 games with a groin injury, the Seahawks should finally have their all-pro safety back in action on Sunday in Buffalo. Jamal Adams returned to practice on Wednesday, albeit limited, and Coach Pete Carroll indicated to reporters he was ready to go. They're still being a bit cautious because Carroll did say that he was going to be a full go, and yet he was listed as limited. He may have participated in 80%, 70%. We don't know any of that information because media members are only allowed to be out on the practice field for the first 10 minutes and then are sent inside. So can't really see everything that goes on during practice in the regular season. Nonetheless, he wasn't out. He did participate in Wednesday's practice, and that's a great sign for him to be able to make his first appearance since week 3 when he exited late in that game against the Cowboys after pulling his groin. It looked like Adams was going to have a shot to play last week against the 49ers, but an illness prevented him from practicing, and without any practices under his belt, the Seahawks decided to err on caution. He really had only practiced once in limited fashion in a month, and so the Seahawks decided, let's wait one more week, and then we'll get him back out there when he's fully healthy. So that's the game plan for this week. Adams has 23 tackles, 9 quarterback hits, and 2 sacks this year in those 3 games. Those 2 sacks, that's still tied for the team lead. So that really tells you where the Seahawks are at in regard to their pass rush continuing to struggle. They will obviously welcome him back with open arms. Ryan Neal has done a fantastic job as a replacement. There's no doubt about that, but he's not Jamal Adams now. Neal can settle into a situational role in sub-packages. I think the Seahawks are going to find ways to get him a few snaps a game because he's earned that. And with him being a tall, athletic player that can play safety and corner, there may be some roles where he can come in and play in that nickel or dime role and give the Seahawks a little bit of a lift. So I think he'll still get some snaps. He's still going to be a special teams guy that's key as well. But Adams is going to give them that Swiss Army knife that can disrupt games in a number of ways. Obviously, he's an incredible pass rusher for a safety. And I think there were times the first 3 weeks where Seattle was still trying to figure out how to best use him. You got to wonder with all the time off here, the last 4 games, if the coaching staff has continued to look, okay, when we get Jamal Adams back, here are some adaptations that we can make to get the most out of him and get the most out of our defense. I'm really curious to see what everything looks like with him back on the field. They've really erred on the side of caution here, so he should be fully healthy, ready to go. Other injuries of note, the Seahawks had 11 players out in Wednesday's practice total. It'd be really nice if they could get their projected starting secondary together for a full game. They've only done that once this entire season, and unfortunately right now, it doesn't look like that may happen. Shaquille Griffin still isn't practicing, though Carroll made it sound like he has a chance to get out of concussion protocol. That's only part of the story for Griffin right now, though. It really is going to come down to testing his hamstring out. He's also dealing with an injury in that regard, and so they're hoping by the end of the week that they can test that out, and if he's feeling better, then maybe he will play against the Buffalo Bills. Right now, if I had to hedge bets, I would say you're probably going to see Trey Flowers starting for him again this weekend, but We'll wait and see. It's still early in the week, but nonetheless, not encouraging that he's not back at practice here after missing last week's game. In the backfield, Chris Carson and Carlos Hyde both did not practice yesterday. Travis Homer did not practice either, which is interesting because Pete Carroll made it sound like he was good to go. They might just be resting him for another day or two just to make sure he's 100% healthy. The updates on the other two backs were not necessarily encouraging. Carroll straight up came out and said Hyde doesn't have much of a chance to make it back this week. So I don't anticipate he's playing on Sunday. Chris Carson's still a week-to-week proposition with a midfoot sprain. So who knows if he's going to be available. They're going to be testing him out like Griffin later this week to see where he's at. And if he's made progress, then maybe he plays on Sunday. But again, it's looking like DJ Dallas, maybe Alex Collins, who was signed to the practice squad on Wednesday. Maybe those are your two lead backs. And then, of course, Travis Homer is supposed to be healthy, even though he didn't practice. Have him back this weekend as well. They'll be a little better off than they were in last week's game. Two other injuries of note in the secondary, DJ Reed and Ugo Amadi were both out on Wednesday with hamstring injuries. Reed was actually listed as questionable going into the 49ers game, and he played. So I think it's more precautionary that he wasn't practicing. Amadi, on the other hand, is kind of like Carlos Hyde. Similar injury. Probably not going to make it back yet this week. Greg Olsen was out with a sore foot. I've been told that is a one-day thing. He's probably going to be back at practice on Thursday. Mike Iupati's still dealing with back problems. The Seahawks not rushing him back. And Benson Maioa was still sidelined on Wednesday with an ankle injury, with Carlos Dunlap coming in now. Maybe not quite as much urgency to rush Maioa back, but he'll be pushing to try to play this weekend. He's another guy that's going to be a 50-50 proposition to play in Buffalo. Coming up next in the second quarter, I'll be joining Joe Marino of Locked On Bills. We're going to break down this exciting matchup between two of the best teams in the NFL, the Seahawks and Bills, both coming into this week with 6 wins apiece, vying for division titles, and both teams think they are Super Bowl contenders, so this is going to be a real litmus test for both teams in New York on Sunday. We'll be right back. You're listening to the Locked On Seahawks podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day. As an avid runner and weightlifter, it's never easy to stay on top of your game. Whether I'm trying to increase my max on bench press or cut my best mile time by 10 seconds, there are always obstacles and you have to find a way to power through them. What is your wall and how do you run through it? For me, I turn to Built Go, the healthy replacement for your energy drink. Coming from the makers of Built Bar, you know it's top quality and delicious. Easy to take in 1.5-ounce packages, it's the best workout gel on the market without the crash feeling you get from products such as 5-Hour Energy, because it's all natural with 1/3 of the caffeine of a monster drink. Built Go comes in 3 delicious flavors, including peanut butter honey, chocolate coconut, and chocolate mint. Loaded with the good stuff to help me power to my goals, it includes fast-absorbing collagen protein, beta-alanine, B3, honey, and a kick of caffeine to help me get going and promote joint, soft tissue, hair, and skin health. This stuff literally makes you look better. Visit BuiltGo.com and use promo code LOCKED and you'll get 30% off your next order. Use promo code LOCKED for 30% off at BuiltGo.com. Let's go.
Joe Marino of Locked On Bills, joined now by Corbin Smith, the host of the Locked On Seahawks podcast, to help us get ready for Week 9 when the 6-2 Buffalo Bills play host to the 6-1 Seattle Seahawks. And of course, with any Seahawks discussion, I think it has to start with Russell Wilson. So Corbin, we've watched Russell Wilson perform like an elite quarterback for a long time, but he's taken another step this season, it would appear. At 31 years old, he's in his 9th season as a starter, and I think he's playing the best football of his career and really taking a step from where he's been in the past. So I'd like to know what's going into this. Why is Russell Wilson playing even more elite than he normally does?
Well, the first thing, and you and I talked about this during the offseason, and I believe that I told you I thought the Seahawks were going to open the passing game up a little bit more, and they have exceeded my expectations in that regard. They truly have let Russell Wilson replace his helmet with a chef's cap. And he's out there just cooking like crazy. And with the weapons that he's got on the outside, I mean, I can't get over the production from DK Metcalf and Tyler Lockett to this point. are the first tandem of receivers on the same team in NFL history to have over 550 receiving yards and seven or more receiving touchdowns apiece in the first seven games of the season. That's never happened before. And a big part of that has been just how dynamic Russell Wilson has been throwing the football downfield. Just a beautiful deep ball passer. He always has been, but he's just taken it to another level this year. And I think the other thing that's impressed me is I think a lot of people going into this year thought he's 31, ninth year in the league. He's not much of a threat running the football. He is averaging over 7 yards per carry as a runner this year. So he is having one of his best seasons running the football. He's so smart about it. He gets down. He doesn't take big hits, but he is an opportunistic runner when he needs to be. And so you add all that together with the fact the offense is now catered to have the football in his hands more often. There's a reason he's got 26 touchdown passes in the first seven games.
So let me ask you this, you know, obviously from a Bills perspective, we have great concern about how to deal with Russell Wilson and DK Metcalf and Tyler Lockett. So as somebody who covers this team, knows Seattle intimately, if you're going to craft a game plan to defend this ridiculously good Seattle offense, what would be some of your main objectives to try to slow it down?
Well, I think disguising your coverage is the best that you can, and that's always easier said than done. But finding ways to try to get Russell Wilson confused for the snap, which is, again, very difficult to do because he's an extremely cerebral quarterback. But the Cardinals were able to do it a little bit a couple weeks ago, and he made some uncharacteristic interceptions in that game. He threw three of them. I wouldn't be banking on him doing that again anytime soon. He had not thrown three interceptions in the game since 2017, but the Cardinals were able to use some exotic blitzes. I thought Vance Joseph did a fantastic job in that game. And they had Patrick Peterson on DK Metcalf. He is the one corner that has been able to find consistent success slowing down DK Metcalf because he's a bigger body corner and he's one of the best in the league still, even at this stage of his career. But they really had trouble slowing down Tyler Lockett in that game. And that's really where the bottom line falls here. You can take one of those receivers away, but good luck taking away both. It's kind of a pick-your-poison type ordeal, especially considering David Moore is on pace for over 500 receiving yards as their number three guy. And they have yet to get Greg Olsen involved like I thought they were going to. It just feels like there's going to be a game at some point where Greg Olsen is going to go off, and that has not happened yet. And so I think a lot of it comes down to the weapons that you've got on offense around Russell Wilson. And you've got to be careful how much you blitz. And the Cardinals were able to get it done, especially late in that game, mixing in some slot corner blitzes, sugaring the A-gaps a little bit, and mixing up when they were coming and when they dropped back into coverage. And it gave the Seahawks some issues. But the 49ers tried to duplicate that this past weekend, and it's safe to say it didn't work.
Let me ask you this, just kind of going off script here a little bit. I mean, obviously, this offense has been unbelievable so far this year. I mean, you look at the pace that Russell Wilson's on. He's on pace to complete, you know, 71.5% of his passes, just shy of 5,000 yards, nearly 60 touchdowns, a passer rating of 120.7. How do you balance this elite level of production, this historic production for this offense to, like, some reasonable level of expectation that there's got to be some regression a little bit? I'm not going to say regression to the mean. I don't think that's fair to slap on a quarterback like Russell Wilson, who's very proven in this league. But, I mean, is it reasonable to expect this pace to continue, or is there got to be some type of a drop-off coming?
You know, I thought there was going to be, and then when you look back at the Vikings game, the Seahawks were shut out in the first half. And again, in that game, they were able to get some pressure on Wilson. They did some mixing up in coverage late in the game. They got an interception where he looked like he was fooled. I've seen more of that from Russell Wilson this year than normal. I think part of it is since he's throwing the ball more, there's been more opportunities for plays like that to happen. But I think if you're looking at potential regression, this is going to sound crazy, but I think the biggest factor could be the fact late in the season that you're going to get rain in Seattle. But even that, the Vikings game, late in the game, he was able to lead the Seahawks right down the field and hit DK Metcalf for the game-winning touchdown. So even the rain, which has been kind of his kryptonite over the years, even the rain wasn't enough to stop Russell Wilson that game. I just think when you look at what the receivers are doing on the outside and how well the offensive line is playing, I think he's got a realistic chance to get to 50-plus passing touchdowns this season with everything he's got at his disposal and just how well that he's playing. Each week that passes by, I become more of a believer that he's got a chance to keep that pace going.
Well, certainly looks like he's going to get his first MVP vote, long overdue this year if he continues this pace. One more off-script item here, Corbin. Tell us about this rushing attack in Seattle. I know their top backs have been injured, but DJ Dallas had a good game last week. What running backs are supposed to be available, and what are your expectations from the run game on Sunday?
So I can tell you from what Pete Carroll told us earlier on Wednesday that Carlos Hyde is probably not going to play in this game. He's still dealing with a hamstring issue, so I don't expect he's going to be there. 50-50 on Chris Carson. They're going to reevaluate him on Friday to see where he's at. So if you had to ask me for a prediction right now, I'll be surprised if either one of them play. Carson has the better chance of the two. I'd be stunned based on what Carroll said if Hyde actually plays this game. But I think Travis Homer is going to be back to full speed. He should be good to go. DJ Dallas. And they just signed Alex Collins to their practice squad. And Alex Collins had almost 1,000 yards rushing for the Ravens 2 years ago. He was drafted by the Seahawks originally. So I think they can get him up to speed and have him available to elevate to the roster if need be on Sunday. So this has still been an effective ground game, even with the injuries that they've had, but they just haven't relied on it like they have in the past because Pete Carroll finally said, you know what, I'm going to open things up here. I'm going to let my best player win the football games for me. And they've put the football into Russell Wilson's hands and still a team that's capable of popping off 100-plus rushing yards any given game, but it just hasn't been something they've had to rely on this year.
It's pretty obvious Seattle has a type when it comes to running backs. They want physical dudes that are going to challenge you with pad level and physicality. That's, I mean, literally all of these backs, whether it's Carson, Hyde, you mentioned Alex Collins, Homer, DJ Dallas, those guys are what I like to call running backs that will stick their face in a fan and like it. So they're gonna come at you with some physicality. Now we've gushed about this Seattle offense, rightfully so. Now let's shift gears to the defense, where there's no question that this unit is struggling, allowing 28 points per game, 461 yards per game. And a number that just, I mean, my eyes popped out of my head when I saw this, 359 passing yards per game on average. What's going on with this unit, Corbin? What can we expect on Sunday? I know they're going to get some reinforcements. Looks like Carlos Dunlap and Jamal Adams will be added to the mix, which, I mean, goodness gracious, that's quite the boost when it comes to talent. But, you know, even when you look at the talent on this defense, it doesn't look to me like a unit that should be performing like this.
No, but I do think that you saw some signs this past weekend. Now, the 49ers have got so many injuries that it's tough to evaluate, and Jimmy Garoppolo missed some open receivers in the first half. He just hasn't looked right this year at all. But there were signs that this Seahawks defense was going to start getting over the hump. They gave up only 117 total yards the first three quarters. Now, fourth quarter, Nick Mullins came in garbage time and led three touchdown drives, and the game actually got interesting for a brief moment late because, well, it wouldn't be a Seahawks game if it didn't end that way. But this defense made some major strides last week, and I think Carlos Dunlap has a chance to be the best acquisition at the trade deadline for any team. He is an impact player. The Bengals were playing a different scheme that really put him at a disadvantage this year, and then they just started diminishing his playing time. I watched a film from last year. This dude is still one heck of a defensive end, an all-around player, long arms, can swat passes away. Not the most explosive athlete, but he's twitchy. He will get around the corner. He's got good dip for a 6'6" pass rusher, and he can rush with power still too. He's a good run defender. So I think that addition is a real potential game changer for this defense. And getting some continuity in the back half, they have enough talent to have a really good secondary, but they've only played one full game with Jamal Adams, Quentin Dunbar, Shaquille Griffin, and Quandre Diggs. That still might not happen on Sunday because Shaquille Griffin isn't practicing today. We'll see where he's going to be at by the time the week gets over with. He didn't play last weekend, but they should have Jamal Adams back. The pieces are there for this to be a good defense. They've had injuries, the lack of continuity, and there's just been some poor execution on that side of the ball. But there were some positives coming out of this past game, and they have been good defending the run for the most part as well.
Corbin, you said something there in your response that triggered something in my mind that I'd like for you to take this chance to address with the Bills fan base. And you said that it wouldn't be a Seattle game if it wasn't weird, right? We kind of know that Seattle, they're terrific franchise. I mean, the success they've had since 2012 is really outstanding. I mean, they basically just show up every year and they get 10 wins and go to the playoffs and all that stuff. Like, very good football team. One of the best really over the last decade. But you know, it seems like Seahawks games always have a chance to be interesting. And I'm sure that's frustrating for the fan base. And it's frustrating when you kind of look at the Bills and the fans right now as they get accustomed to rooting for a team that's been much better over the last 4 years under Coach McDermott. But one common narrative that fans keep dropping is that the Bills just don't have a killer instinct. They always let teams hang around. They don't put people away. And, you know, they've had 5 one-score games this year. And, you know, there's a lot of one-score games over the last few years. And they'll have leads and they'll squander them, but they'll still win. You know, how do you deal with that amongst the 12s when it comes to, my goodness, can they just put teams away? Where's the killer instinct? Is that something you deal with? And if so, you know, what's some of that messaging that you give to the fan base of the team that you cover?
Well, I can say this from a reporter perspective. What I always tell the fans is before the weekend, just make sure you've got enough aspirin or whatever else that you need on tap, because you're guaranteed that the game is going to go down to the wire. Even this last one, they were up 27. They were up 30-7, actually. They were up 27-7, got a field goal. They were up 30-7 at the end of the third quarter. And at one point, it was 30-22. They ended up overturning a two-point conversion that put it back to a 10-point game. But it's just like, why can't you just step on the neck and win? And I'm saying this as a beat reporter, because it's like, I've got my article done, and now you guys are spoiling it. And the Cardinals game the weekend before was even worse. Had it something done with 3 minutes to go, 10-point lead, nothing's going to happen here. Up, tied game. Up, they lost in overtime. Yeah. And so it's just, you know, I will say this to Bills fans. You know, if you're winning a lot of those one-score games, then you just got to relish that, especially with all the issues the Bills have had winning games. But I know Seahawks fans, it wears down on them. I don't know what the life expectancy is for 12s, but you got to wonder if all of these tight finishes that are basically stroke-inducing, and they've been really bad about it this year, you just got to wonder how that's beating down the morale of a team. Even though you're 6-1, you just feel like this team is – that they've underachieved and they're 6-1. I guess that's the scary thing. You feel like this could be a much better team than what you've seen the first 7 games, and yet they should be undefeated. They should have won that Cardinals game. So it's definitely taxing for fans. There's no question.
Yeah, I think some good messaging there that the Bills – Mafia can find some parallels too with tight games that you don't feel like should have been tight. But last thing I want to ask you is we really, you know, hone in on this matchup specifically between Seattle and Buffalo. What are some of those X factors that come to mind for you that you think will be critical on Sunday?
Well, it's weird to say Jamal Adams is going to be an X factor, but Ryan Neal has played really well in his place the last 4 games. And so adding back in a player like Adams, that's such a dynamic talent, but he's so unique in his skill set, being such a phenomenal blitzer and stuff, that I thought at times the first 3 games of the year that actually kind of hurt the Seahawks, because they were still trying to figure out how to best deploy him. You got to wonder, now that he's been away for 4 games, has the coaching staff had an opportunity to really dive in and say, okay, our defense made strides last weekend, now we got to try to put in this one heck of a puzzle piece, but we still haven't figured out completely how to best deploy him. You got to wonder if that extra time here without him in the lineup, that maybe they have a better idea how they're going to use him. So I have to have him as the X factor, because you and I both know with his all-pro pedigree, if he's healthy and the defense has figured out how to best utilize him, this is a guy that can turn a defense that's been one of the league's worst into a mid-level or even a top 10 caliber defense. He's that kind of a football player. Welcome back to Crossover Thursday. I'm Corbin Smith of Locked On Seahawks. Joining me for this week's episode, Joe Marino of Locked On Bills. Seattle getting ready to travel to New York to face another 6-win team. Joe, I was telling you this back in the offseason. We had our little visit getting ready for this game after schedules came out, and I told you then, I thought this was going to be one of the toughest road games that the Seahawks had the entire year. I always circle Arizona because it's a house of horrors for the Seahawks, but I thought this game in Buffalo had the makings of an instant classic, and here we are now in week 9, 2 of the best records in the NFL, Seattle atop the NFC at 6-1, Buffalo sitting near the top of the AFC standings, they're in first place in the AFC East at 6-2. I got to start off this conversation, much like you did with Russell Wilson, I got to start with Josh Allen, because he got off to such a red-hot start, 3 of the first 4 games, north of 70% completion rate, over 300 yards passing, The last three games, though, two of those he's been 61% or less, two games with 154 passing yards or less against the Patriots and Chiefs, four picks in the last four games. My big question here, where has Allen improved the most going into year three? And what's been the most noticeable thing for you as far as the drop-off, the struggles here in the last month?
Well, you know, I want to kind of talk about some of that contrast between the first 4 weeks and in the second 4 weeks where, you know, there's definitely a dip in production when it comes to Josh Allen, especially after how, you know, like you said, he had a red hot start. It truly was. And so I think it's really important to separate reasons from excuses. And I say that because this is probably going to feel like I'm being a little bit defensive here, but I think there's some context that we have to insert into the last 4 weeks when we really dig into why was it so, you know, we'll call it even elite the first 4 weeks, and then why did it have a step back over the last four? And, you know, you particularly look at the last three games. I think that's where the most statistical regression really occurred. And so one of those games was the Kansas City Chiefs game, where that game was played in the rain, and the Bills only had possession of the football for 22 minutes of game clock. So the passing output was obviously not ideal when you consider they just didn't have the ball very much, and then there was rain throughout the entire game. Then, of course, they played the Jets, where he completed 70% of his passes for 300 yards in a win against the Jets. And then last week against New England, the Bills ran it 38 times, passed it 18 times, and so the raw data isn't going to yield gaudy passing numbers, especially when you consider that the Patriots, they played dime or quarter defense on 54 of 56 total plays. I mean, they basically said, please run the football. We don't want to deal with, you know, the passing production that Josh Allen can produce. And so, again, the New England game was in wet conditions, and the wind was anywhere from 20 to 50 mile an hour gusts throughout the entire game. So just the weather factor there played heavily into the opportunities to throw the football. So, you know, I think that context is really important. Again, I'm trying to differentiate reasons from excuses. And so hopefully it didn't sound like I went on a defensive spree there with Josh Allen. I just think that that's important to note whenever you compare that first 4 weeks to the second 4 weeks. But you look at this game, and we talked about the Seattle pass defense. They've got some players, but, you know, they're giving up a ton of yards through the air. And so you kind of look at this as an opportunity for Josh to maybe restore some of that early season magic against a defense that's given up, you know, basically 360 a game through the air and a ton of points. So you look at this as an opportunity for Josh to maybe right some of those issues that, you know, plagued his production over the last few weeks. Some other factors that come to mind: John Brown, he's been injured. He missed a game. He's tried to play hurt, and you could just tell he's not right. And then in addition, you've seen a fundamental shift in how defenses are playing against the Bills. In the past 2 years of Josh Allen's career and the first four games this year, it's been man coverage and daring Josh Allen to hit throws. Well, starting this year, he really started to hit those throws. And over the last 4 weeks, you've seen a big shift in teams playing man coverage, and now they're playing soft zone coverage and really challenging Josh Allen to throw with anticipation and be patient. And though, he wants to throw the ball down the field, but he's going to have to pick his spots a little bit more and take those profits. So I think it's been an adjustment for Josh Allen and the Bills defense to adapt to the new way that NFL defenses are playing against him. Now, when it comes to the overall improvement from, you know, the first 2 years of Josh Allen's career to where he is now, I think Josh Allen has steadily gotten better throughout the entire course of his career. When you look at the player he was at Wyoming to his rookie year, to late in his rookie year, to early last year, to late last year, and then this year, I mean, he's taken incremental steps at every course of, you know, the road so far. And so, you know, this year, I think what it really comes down to is that his approach is different. The game is slowing down for him. He handles pressure a lot better. He's actually become a more accurate passer, which is something not a lot of players are able to do. That has led to him playing a lot better this year. So while the last four games weren't quite as dynamic as the ridiculous start to the season, Allen, I think, is very much kind of coming into his own as a player and playing more consistent, better football.
And that leads me into, I'm glad you mentioned the weather in there, because that's something that I had noticed looking back as I've been trying to game plan a little bit here for some articles and stuff, that has certainly been a factor, and they leaned in the run game a lot last week. And it does seem like there's been a few more questionable throws that have been sprinkled in there, a few more interceptions and stuff, but that's typical. I mean, Russell Wilson, like I said, had a really rough game with three interceptions. So every quarterback's going to have that happen time to time. But I know when the trade was made for Stephon Diggs, there were some people out there that questioned that move because of how much was given up for him, the first round pick and several other draft picks on top of that. And there were some people wondering, is Josh Allen going to be the guy that can really take advantage of having that true number one receiver? I think it's been safe to say to this point that that trade has worked out pretty darn well for the Buffalo Bills. And I think this is kind of a game that maybe Stephon Diggs wants to get a little bit of revenge, because he has actually had a little bit of trouble in the past against the Seahawks, and the same corners that they have there, Trey Flowers, two of his best games have been against Stephon Diggs when he was with the Vikings, which is just kind of a curious fun fact there. But what has it been like watching that rapport between Allen and Diggs develop and blossom so quickly?
Well, I mean, Stephon Diggs is leading the AFC in receiving yards and, mm-hmm. you know, has 695 yards in eight games and is second in the league. I mean, obviously the production is there, and Diggs is a true number one wide receiver, which is exactly what the team needed. And, you know, it's funny, we go back to last year where, you know, John Brown and Cole Beasley, you know, a couple of veterans came to Buffalo and it was the same thing. Oh, well, they won't be productive with Josh Allen. Their careers are over. Well, John Brown had the best year of his career last year, and so did Cole Beasley. And now you see the same thing. John, you know, the Bills trade for Stephon Diggs, and the narratives come out. Well, he can't succeed with Josh Allen, and his career's over. And, well, he's having clearly the best start of his career ever. And you know, it's how many times are we going to do this, you know? So it's been a great chemistry between the two. I think I'm really impressed by how quickly it came together, especially in – this offseason with the pandemic and not really having a whole lot of opportunity to get on the same page and get the timing and chemistry down. But it's taken off. Josh Allen loves throwing the ball to Diggs, all levels of the field. He's good after the catch. He's good in contested situations. He gets open. And so, you know, I'm sure from a Seattle defense perspective, you know, that's going to be a key matchup for them. And that's interesting. I didn't know that about Trey Flowers. And so we'll see if Flowers continues the upper hand against Diggs, or if, you know, the script starts to shift. But yeah, Diggs has been worth every bit that the Bills gave up. Obviously a first round pick, a fourth round pick, and a couple of late day three picks. But this team needed to score more points this year. That was what held them back last year. I mean, a playoff team last year, a 10 win team, but they only averaged 19 points per game. That was 24th in the NFL. And so Diggs has been a big reason why this team's actually scoring enough points this year.
I want to talk one last question on offense, kind of leaning off that, because really last year, most of their offense was through the ground game. And early this year, the rushing attack has been inconsistent. And part of it's Zach Moss was dealing with some injuries, the rookie out of Utah, but finally had his breakout game last week. I know Pete Carroll loved Zach Moss. They had a pre-draft visit with him. They were rumored to be a team that were going to pick him, and he got off the board before the Seahawks could even consider making that move. But do you think that that's an area – I know the Bills are probably licking their lips about Seattle's pass defense, but – the Minnesota Vikings were able to find success in the ground game. That's the one team that's really been able to run the ball on the Seahawks. Do you see that as an area that Buffalo, after really running the ball well last week against New England, that maybe they might be looking to take advantage a little bit, especially if the Seahawks are prioritizing trying to slow down Josh Allen as a runner and Stephon Diggs on the outside?
So, you know, it's funny you mentioned Zach Moss being a favorite of Pete Carroll. That seems like a totally on-brand statement based on the running backs that Seattle has. It's definitely their type. You know, I'll tell you this, the Bills' rushing attack has found itself a little bit over the last 2 weeks where their production definitely picked up against the Jets and Patriots. But the Bills' offensive script is just very pass-heavy. You know, they're very much a pass-first team. And so that's what they do best on offense. And so while I'm sure they'll try to have some success running the football, I think it's going to be a pass-heavy day for the Bills' offense. That's been the script they like to work this year, as long as the weather cooperates, which it hasn't over the last couple of weeks. But, you know, it looks good so far when you see the early forecast for Sunday.
It's early.
Yeah, you never know in Buffalo especially. But, you know, Moss didn't have his best game of the year. You mentioned he had an injury early in the season. Turf toe, that was a problem. Devin Singletary, the Bills starting running back, actually had a good week as well last week against the Patriots. They both had 14 carries for over 80 yards, and then Moss had the two rushing touchdowns. So I think on Sunday you'll see the Bills want to throw it. I think it'll be a run-to-pass ratio or a pass-to-run ratio of about 65 to 35. And you know, that's the Bills' recipe. They throw it better than they run it. They'll try to run it a little bit. But, you know, I think this is a game where you're going to have to score points. You know, I think that the Seattle's going to get – they're going to get some points. And so you need to do what you do best on offense. And, you know, maybe you try to slow things down a little bit with the ground game. But if you're going to have to keep pace with Russell Wilson – you're going to have to air it out a bit, and I expect the Bills to do that on Sunday.
Leads me perfectly into talking about the defense, because obviously Buffalo had one of the best defenses in the NFL last year. This has not seemed like the same group from a year ago. They've given up 26 or more points four times. They've had their moments. They've looked like last year's squad, but then they've also had games where they've given up a bunch of points, 42 a few weeks ago against the Titans. Has it boiled down to health? They have had quite a few injuries. Or is it really just like the rest of the league? I just feel like it seems like nobody can play defense in this COVID season. What have been the core issues for this squad?
Well, shout out to like the Colts and Steelers, I think. There's a couple teams out there that can
Teams that can stop people.
Right, Ravens a little bit. But, yeah, I mean, mostly this – yeah, you're right. I mean, across the league – defense is really, really struggled, and that hasn't escaped the Bills. And, you know, it's been disappointing because, like you mentioned, the Bills' defense has been really good. It's been top three in the last two seasons, but, you know, not close to that this year. So I think the same COVID struggles that I think a lot of people are or a lot of teams are dealing with, but also injuries have been very, very problematic, especially in the back seven. The Bills' linebackers, Tremaine Edmonds and Matt Milano, it's a really good group. Edmonds has battled a shoulder injury from week one. He looks nothing like the player that we saw last year go to the Pro Bowl. Matt Milano, his running mate, who's so important to the Bills' defense, he's a matchup guy. He's the person that goes and lines up over tight ends and running backs and has good range sideline to sideline, a critical piece of the defense. He's missed, I mean, basically most of the season with a hamstring and pectoral injury. When he's been able to play, it's been on a pitch count, basically just third downs over the last couple of weeks. So, that's hurt the team. All of their top three corners have been injured. Josh Norman and Levi Wallace have both been on IR this year. Trey White has had a back injury all year that caused him to miss a game and him to play hurt a little bit. Micah Hyde was out last week with a concussion up front. Vernon Butler has had a groin injury that he's been dealing with. Quentin Jefferson, obviously a familiar name to Seahawks fan, he's had a knee injury lately. So the list just goes on and on with injuries.
Sounds like the Seahawks injury list.
It's frustrating. You wish you can get your best 11 out there and see what happens. But, you know, it's not just injuries. I don't think that's fair to put it all there. I think they're not playing as well. They're not playing with the same type of emotion that they have in the past. And, you know, they found themselves a little over the last couple of games. And, you know, from a Bills perspective, you hope that continues. But, you know, this is a defense that still has more questions than answers at this point.
And that leads me – this is really the last big question before we talk X factors here. But looking statistically, a couple things that jumped out to me. The run defense, top five in the NFL in rushing yardage given up, 4.7 yards per carry. I would think even if Seattle doesn't have Chris Carson – with the backs they've got, again, DJ Dallas looked fairly decent, especially late in the game. He got more confidence last week in his first start. They've got some guys back there. The offensive line has played really well this season. The run game is an issue that the Bills have, but most importantly, we talked about this earlier, you got to come up with a game plan, though. You've got some stars back there with Tre'Davious White, Jordan Poyer. If you have Micah Hyde, you've got some really good players in that secondary. That's a big deal in this game. You asked me about trying to game plan for Russell Wilson. I want to just kind of pick your brain, being that you know the Bills' defense as well as anybody. How in the heck are you trying to game plan when you've got Russell Wilson and DK Metcalf, Tyler Lockett? I think Greg Olsen this game with the tight end issues that the Bills have had defensively. How do you try to game plan for this team? And more importantly, what do you do with Tre'Davious White when you've got two legitimate number one receivers to try to deal with?
Well, I've got four things written down. I tried to answer this question on my podcast yesterday, so I'll share some of my thoughts here as I'm tasked with this question. I think number one, from a coverage perspective, the Bills have flirted with some man coverage this year, and they don't have the guys to do that. I mean, collectively, the Bills have some really good coverage players in the secondary, but they're not suited for man coverage. They're not great athletes. They're not going to be able to run with Lockett and Metcalf. So I think you need to stay true to your zone principles and use them to minimize the mismatches that exist with Metcalf and Lockett. Understand the leverage of your coverage, what it's designed to do, and use zone, because you're not going to be able to win foot races, and obviously Wilson's tremendously accurate down the field. So number one, play zone. Number two, Micah Hyde, Jordan Poyer. You mentioned this. Those are the Bills' starting safeties. They're a really good group, but you know what they do best, and when the Bills have had success against really good quarterbacks in previous years, it's been their ability to disguise and not give any pre-snap reads and confuse quarterbacks deep into the snap by disguising their attentions and taking away windows and capping routes. So, you know, in addition to playing that zone coverage, I think Hyde and Poyer disguising their intentions and trying to eliminate some of those opportunities down the field by staying leveraged will be really important. You know, the Bills don't have great speed in their secondary, but historically they've still not given up much in terms of vertical passing. And that's because Poyer and Hyde know how to do what I just said. It needs to show up on Sunday. Number three, I have be disciplined with your pass rush lanes. You know, Russ Wilson's good no matter what they do. If it's play action, no play action. If he gets it out in 2.5 seconds or if he holds onto the football, it doesn't matter. He's productive. So you still got to try to get pressure on the quarterback. That's still undefeated in the NFL, but you have to do that by staying disciplined in your rush lanes. We know that Russell Wilson off script is an elite football player. He's got the best passer rating in football when he holds onto the football for more than 2.5 seconds. So if you're going to get after him, you better do it by being disciplined in your rush lanes, because if he breaks contain of the pocket, it's lethal. You want to get him drifting, going backwards, and not breaking the contain. So be disciplined in your rush lanes and obviously try to get that organic pressure on the quarterback. And then number four, I wrote down, this is the last point, is live with some production in the run game. If Seattle wants to run the football, I think that's okay. I think every play that Seattle hands the ball off and Russell Wilson doesn't throw it, it's a net positive for the Buffalo Bills. And so just like the approach that they had with Kansas City, they said, go ahead and run the ball all you want. We'll let you gash us in the run game. We're just not going to let Pat Mahomes chuck the ball down the field to Mecole Hardman and Tyreek Hill. And the Bills lost that game, but it kept them in it at the same time simultaneously. There was two different plays where Pat Mahomes broke the contain of the pocket and hit a throw on third and long. And there was another play where the Bills forced a fumble, but it was a tick too late and Clyde Edwards-Helaire's knee hit the ground. But that philosophy introduced enough variance to give the Bills a chance against an offense that is loaded with mismatches. And so I think some of those principles that were present in that Kansas City game plan, you can apply here to give yourself your best chance to stop, you know, an offense that everyone in the league respects and understands what it's capable of.
Excellent insight there. And honestly, I have a list here and you checked off three things that I had down here that I thought about looking what I would expect Seattle to be able to see this weekend. And I definitely think the zone coverage aspect, I just don't think the Bills have the horses, as you said, in man coverage. That would be, especially against the speedy receivers that the Seahawks have, that seems like a recipe for disaster if they went that route. But real quick, you posted this question to me. What is the X factor, or who is the X factor for the Bills in this game? If Buffalo wants to move to 7-2 and beat the NFC's number one seed right now, who's the guy that's that X factor that needs to step up this week?
Well, I mean, without getting into players first, I mean, just the fact that it's at your stadium and you do have Seattle coming east for this game. And so, that I think is always an X factor in these types of games. You certainly want to try to defend your dirt and use that to your advantage. But, you know, I have a hard time saying it's any other player besides Josh Allen. You know, quarterback play is so important. And, you know, do we see the Josh Allen of the first 4 weeks of the season where, I mean, he could do no wrong and he's hitting throws down the field and couldn't be stopped? Or is this one of those games where, you know, the opportunities aren't there and he presses and a veteran quarterback like Russell Wilson just outduels him? And so I just don't know where else to go besides when you isolate it and say, if there's one single player that it matters the most and he's the X factor, it's going to be Josh Allen. And You know, I don't think that's a bad thing. He's certainly proven himself. He's a clutch quarterback. He's gotten better. He's been productive. But, you know, this is one of those moments, right, where you say, all right, Buffalo, you want to prove some legitimacy to your 6-2 record. You want to be a team that's viewed as somebody who's a contender that can make a deep playoff run. Well, go do it. Here's your opportunity. And you know, I mean, even you can kind of, based on the questions you asked me, Corbin, I don't mean this is a shot at you, but you can see that there's some flaws in this football team just based on the questions that you had for me to discuss this football team. And so how do you start to silence those critics? How do you start to actually play your best football as the season moves around and start answering some of the questions that have surrounded this team despite a 6-2 record? This team is 6-2. They're in great shape, but they haven't played their best game. Can they play their best game? And if they do, that'll be because of Josh Allen. So it always comes back to Josh Allen when it comes to this Bills football team.
That's really the theme of this football game. You've got two teams with 6 wins, and yet you and I have both reiterated this a couple times. I don't think the Seahawks have played anywhere near to their potential through the first couple months of the season, and you could make an argument with how the Bills' defense particularly has been playing that they have not been playing their best football, and yet both these teams have really good records, and both will have an opportunity for a marquee victory here.
You can follow me on Twitter at CorbinSmithNFL. You can follow Joe at TheJoeMarino. Make sure to subscribe to our podcast on Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, Spotify, wherever you listen to your podcast by going to our website, LockedOnSeahawks.com. Coming up tomorrow, going to wrap up the week, as always, with my colleague Nick Lee. We're going to be devising a game plan for a Seahawks victory, breaking down some X's and O's on offense, defense, and special teams as the Seahawks try to improve to 7-1 against a very good Bills squad in Buffalo. Enjoy the rest of your Thursday. Go Hawks.